You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Welcome back to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast. Episode 23. Today, Ruhi is joined by Robin for a conversation that is both powerful and riveting. Without any further ado, take it away, Ruhi.
Thank you, Mike. I am welcoming Robin Shreen to Sleep in Society podcast. I am very happy to have you here. And if you would like to give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself, please.
Hi. I'm Robin. I'm a fourth year student at Queen's. I'm in the life sciences program. I'm 21 years old, and I'm doing my honors thesis right now at KGH.
Your thesis is in what right now?
Right now I'm working with COPD patients, and we're looking at the overnight characterization of their respiratory mechanics and investigating the efficacy of an overnight bronchodilator. Mm-hmm. So we're working in the sleep lab as well as with the COPD patients.
And that's how we met.
Yes.
And I got introduced to you via your thesis supervisor and my good friend, Dr.
Nicole Dominic.
Yes, an extraordinary human. I cannot say enough about her.
No, she is fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm so glad actually that you are working with her. And what a fantastic opportunity. And you have a very special condition.
Yes.
While you're doing these incredible things in with your life in terms of your education and doing thesis, you are living with something. Do you want to tell us about it, please?
Yeah, so it's right now not officially diagnosed, but what's considered like subclinical narcolepsy, which is right now either going to stay as type 2, which is kind of the situation where I don't fall asleep uncontrollably, but it leaves me with an extreme amount of chronic fatigue that comes in and out and in phases, or it after more sleep studies, we'll figure out that it's not necessarily narcolepsy, but more on just the side of chronic fatigue, which has no diagnostic tests and no treatment. So it's a bit of a limbo.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, please tell us, how long have you experienced this? And tell us like what it feels like. I people to get an idea. I want them to be able to get this idea of what chronic fatigue looks like, that it's not like, oh, I'm tired or I'm sleepy. It's a completely, it manifests itself completely differently. Please.
So at the start of my second year, I was living with a bunch of my friends and they're fantastic. They're my rocks. They do everything for me. But during that time, I just started getting increasingly more fatigued and tired, and I went through these episodes where I started falling asleep on a Monday afternoon and I wouldn't wake up until Tuesday, Thursday morning, a few days later, and I would be asleep for a large sum of days. I'd sleep for 20, 30, 40 hours at a time, waking up at all. And if I did wake up, it would be to go to the bathroom, like eat a snack because my housemates would try to feed me food or check on me. But I can really stay awake much longer than that, so I just go back to bed. And when it first started, I kind of looked at it more as, okay, this is some kind of flu situation where it was just staying for a really long time.
Did it creep up, or was it? Did it suddenly become this thing, or did you have symptoms of this growing up, or was this a very sudden transition into
something like? It was a bit of a sudden transition in that from September to December kind of thing of my second year, it got progressively worse, but it hadn't really been a problem before then at all. I mean, everybody gets tired, and that's a good thing to point out. It's like there's a huge difference between fatigue and chronic fatigue and being tired. Mm-hmm. My whole life I've been a fairly busy and active person, so obviously I'm quite familiar with being overtired due to overworking or having too heavy of a schedule. But this became more of a uncontrollable kind of thing. I would sleep for 10, 20 hours and still wake up feeling like I haven't slept in days. And then it slowly built on that where I would be able to wake up at a certain point every day, but I became fully nocturnal. So I'd go to bed at anywhere between like 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. And then I would sleep till 6, 7, 8 p.m. the next night and then wake up And as my housemates were making dinner, I'd be making mm-hmm. breakfast. And then I'd stay up for 3-4 hours, go to sleep, do the same thing. So it became more fragmented because I needed to figure out how to continue dealing and managing school at the same time.
How long did this go on before you realized that, oh, wait a minute, this is not a flu. Like, this is something that is like this is something else altogether different. This is not going away.
I think it was about after a month of the severe fatigue where it would come on, where I think at the beginning it was, oh, it's a flu, oh, it's that kind of thing, or it could be mental health related because fatigue is something that's really common in depression. But mm-hmm. the more I thought about it, it's I'm not depressed, I'm not anxious, I'm not upset. There's mm-hmm. nothing in my mood at all that is related to this, because when I was awake, I was eager to be awake. I wanted to go out, I wanted to be with my friends, I wanted to go to school, I wanted to learn. So once that period of about a month or two passed where I was like, okay, this isn't something that's environmental due to mental health, and it's not something that's physical because a flu wouldn't last a month or two, that's mm-hmm. when I first went to student wellness services and tried to see a doctor and was basically like, hi, I'm a student. I'm really tired all the time. Can't do anything. My brain's not functioning. Please help. And they initially ran some tests, I mean, the basics, blood work, iron, B12, thyroid, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Then Lyme serology, once all of those...
Oh, yeah, so that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But they did run the Lyme disease.
They ran that the first visit I went. Mm-hmm. And mono mm-hmm. were all of the things that mm-hmm. were the most common. You know, you go to the doctor, they're seeing chronic fatigue, it's probably iron, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But all my tests came back totally normal. After that... actually, it kind of developed for my whole life. I've had fairly bad headaches. That kind of developed into migraines, like post-puberty-ish.
Okay.
And once this chronic fatigue happened, my migraines got a lot worse. So they would... There was actually in second year, I think, 2 or 3 times I ended up in the ER after having a terrible migraine for 4 or 5 days that just would not go away. And if I got up, I would... like get nauseous or I'd throw up or mm-hmm. I couldn't open my eyes and that kind of thing. So I'd end up going to the ER. So when I went to the doctor that first time, it was partially chronic fatigue and partially my migraines have gotten a lot worse, mm-hmm. which I think they've managed to stay pretty together throughout the whole process. The first referral that I got sent to was for neurology. Mm-hmm. I went to the neurologist after... 4 or 5 month wait time because every specialist is so long.
Yeah, there's a long waiting list to get in. Yeah.
So I went to the neurologist and basically what they said is, we don't see anything in your basic blood work either. We'll do a CT to see if you have a tumor. If you don't, then like not our problem kind of thing. Because mm-hmm. migraines for anybody is a bit of a challenge. Nobody knows what they are caused by, what they do. They can prescribe triptans, which... for me, made my nausea and migraines even worse. So,
do you recall when would these migraines just come about, like any time? Were they related close to your cycles, like, were they just randomly popping up?
They would randomly pop up. I would say most days I had at least a headache, mm-hmm. a mild headache, that some days would go away a bit, but then. If I went to bed with a bad headache, sometimes I could tell, like, I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to have a migraine. And that's usually when it would onset. I don't usually wake up and then have a migraine that progresses. I either wake up with a headache and it stays as a headache, or I wake up with a migraine and I'm screwed for 3 days.
Yeah. And you don't recall if anything was setting them off? Because sometimes I know that sometimes if we're drinking something... or, you know,
a nasty hangover.
Yeah, no, not even a hangover, but sometimes, like, even in terms of like wine has something that triggers. Mm-hmm. Like, my sister has those actually. Mm-hmm. She can't actually drink wine because mm-hmm. my sister's had migraines mm-hmm. for a very long time.
My mom is the exact same way, actually.
And my mother had migraines where she would be locked in a room for 3 to 4 days. She couldn't even have light mm-hmm. because she became so hypersensitive to light that she mm-hmm. would be actually throwing up. I remember that mm-hmm. in my
It's not a fun experience.
No, it's a horrible, horrible experience. And I'm actually weirdly experiencing migraines now, as I'm entering my 40s. I've had headaches, but now I can start, like, I have headaches now that don't go away and I understand it's combination of like shift work, combination of like entering, coming close to like perimenopause, and all of those things are actually coming in together and holding. And it's not a good experience. It's a horrible experience. I am so sorry that you're going through this.
Yeah. And when you describe it to people, it's either, oh, I've had migraines before, I totally understand, or I've had a headache before, it's not really that bad, you're probably fine, or being over dramatic. And every doctor you walk into, you say, I'm having migraines. The first thing they do is kind of like put their foot down and look at me and they say, do you even know what a migraine is? Like, are you having headaches or are you having migraines? And then I say, no, like I have aura, which is where one eye goes black or my peripheries go black. Mm-hmm. I stand up and get nauseous. I can't do light. It's a full head sensation.
Yeah. And it's not, it takes everything just to stay somewhat human during these particular episodes because they're quite all-consuming. Mm-hmm. Like, from my personal experience right now as well, and what I've seen in my mother and my sister, I remember those things where we had to make sure that there was no sound around and there was no light around. Mm-hmm. So you're getting migraines.
Getting migraines that have gotten worse. Mm-hmm.
Many times do you get them now? How many times have you been getting them over, a month?
Back then, I was getting a nasty migraine that would last a few days, probably once every couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So it'd be 3 or 4 days out of a 14-day period sort of thing.
And knocked out. You're knocked out for 3 to 4 days.
It's really hard for me to be able to separate what was knocking me out, if it was the fatigue or the migraine, because they were so...
related, like overlapping, and
so I couldn't necessarily say which was more effective. The one thing I can say is that migraines are a lot easier to quantify for me, because you can go to a doctor and say I have these symptoms, but with fatigue, it's something that's so intertwined with our society that you say I'm tired and people are like, well, so what? We're all tired.
We're living in a very tired society.
And my response to that is, I totally understand. There are tons of people around who are tired and that are borderlining on fatigue. But for me, it wasn't because I was overworking myself, and it wasn't because of mental illness, and it wasn't because of all these things. It was from some unknown cause that genuinely I just had no control whatsoever over the like physical stamina of my body.
And how does that translate into your everyday life? Because being tired, we're tired, I'm tired, like you wake up
every sleep conference ever, everybody's tired.
It's actually the funniest thing. I think the sleep people are the tiredest people. It's kind of ironic that way. But even like when I know when I'm tired, I'm still able to push myself through this, right? You're able to push yourself through things. I'm tired, I can still do physical activity because there's a separation. But when you're fatigued, it's not the same thing.
It's an impossible... It's a full body experience.
Yeah, please tell us about this so we have an understanding of what that feels like.
I was trying to think of a really good analogy, and the only one that I could think of was everybody's experienced a night where you don't sleep at all, like pull an all-nighter. Mm-hmm. Then you you're awake in the next morning, and then for me that time hits at, you know, the late afternoon where it's that... your body physically telling you, like, you have to go to bed right now, the uncontrollable, like, need to close your eyes, the heaviness and the pressure behind your eyes and in your body, and just, it comes along with kind of that emotional, like, I need to sleep.
Yeah.
I need to go right now.
And the heaviness that the body itself is feeling, where, you know, moving itself becomes a very arduous task. It's not like you can will yourself. It's just like, I'm not doing this.
Which
is like, we're not doing this. This is not
happening. Up to you.
This is not happening. Yeah, we're crashing. I don't care where you are. This is what's happening.
Yeah, so for people who don't understand, I'd say it's probably close to what they would feel after pulling an all-nighter or two, that level of fatigue. Or how I describe it is everybody, when you wake up in the morning, you know, you have that feeling like, I want to go back to bed. You know, everybody snoozes that alarm, and it's kind of that instantaneous, we could go back to sleep at this very moment if we want to.
And want to go back to sleep.
Yeah, and for most people, pretty much everybody I talk to actually feels some kind of physical pain when they wake up in the morning, where they're...
How sad is that?
Yeah.
As human beings.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Sadness.
But for most people, you get out of bed, and my friends say, oh, you put your alarm on the other side of the room, and then you get up after 5-10 minutes. Then you're at that point where it's like, okay, like, I'm tired, but I can keep going. For me, that first initial shock lasts the first 3, 4, 5 hours I'm awake.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And how did that affect your everyday life is what I want to get into that. Like, how is that impacting the reality of your everyday existence? Because it's not like you have enough on your plate as a student. You have a job. You are doing your thesis, which is very consuming. And you are also getting ready for your... Are you getting set up for moving
Masters.
Further in terms of your education? Which, by the way, is a lot. I understand, like, we are all in that boat, like kids who are in the university, but it's still a lot. Plus now you have this condition, which is debilitating in some ways, like during some days where you are not even able to do anything. How has that impacted your reality?
The way I like to think of it is that everybody around you has something that's going on that's some sort of extenuating circumstance. I have friends who have really bad anxiety, depression, that kind of thing, and they're balancing that on top of school. For me, it's chronic fatigue, narcolepsy that's weighing on that. For me, because it was such a schedule-based thing where if I fell asleep, I don't really have any real conscious ability to wake up at any certain time.
And you're missing classes, you're missing deadlines.
Second year was really tough because with school, if I'd approach a professor about it and say, I'm having really bad health problems, I can't do this, they'd say, oh, well, do you have a note from accessibility services? Have you been to see a physician? Like, what's going on exactly? And then the response to, oh, I'm really tired is everybody's tired.
Go get some sleep.
Yeah. Or get this deadline in, or take the whatever penalty that was assigned to it. Once second year passed, I realized that...
Sorry, did you not get a note at all? Like, were you not diagnosed at that point in any
way? I'm still not really diagnosed.
Oh, you're still not diagnosed. You're in your fourth year, wrapping up.
It's been almost 3 years of physicians. I've been to see neurology, internal medicine, sleep specialist... who else have I seen? 6 or 7 different physicians at Student Wellness Services. And every person I've seen has, well, the sleep study I did, the narcolepsy one is the sleep latency test during the day. And that one is basically a series of naps that you sleep, and then they see how fast you fall asleep and if you dream in or if you go straight into REM.
Yeah, that's a narcolepsy test. It's called a multiple sleep latency test.
Yeah.
Where they put you in for a nap for 15 minutes up to 35 minutes, depending on whether you're dreaming or not. And it's a series of naps, 4 of them. It's happening every hour and a half to 2 hours. This is just to assess whether you are you have narcolepsy or not. So you've done that.
So I did that, and the study was inconclusive in that for... I don't know how many out of the naps it was, but for a certain percentage of them, I did go straight into REM, and I had all the characteristics of what they would see in narcolepsy, but I had one nap short kind of thing to get a full diagnosis. So when I left, the doctor said, oh, wait a few years to see if it progresses. I can't confirm or deny whether it's narcolepsy, but it's definitely a strong possibility. And then... But because it was subclinical, he didn't want to do anything about it. So he sent me back to my physician. And then my physician says, oh, the sleep doctor says it's nothing right now. So my family doctor says, well, we'll just wait and see also. And they've actually told me, well, if none of these specialists have done anything for you, then that means there's nothing to be done. So why would I take that extra step to look into it? So on a daily, day-to-day basis, I think the hardest battle was realizing that this wasn't going to get a quick solution. Mm-hmm. And it meant that I had to change my behavior in order to be as productive as I can with what I'm given. So it was more just self-accepting my my boundaries and my limits.
Basically, the onus is on you at this particular point to see how you can fit your entirety of your life to accommodate this particular condition, which mm-hmm. Which remains undiagnosed mm-hmm. at this particular mm-hmm. point. And how did you do that? And how challenging is it?
It's a bit of a battle between how much blame to put on yourself. You know, as being a student, again...
Why are you putting blame on yourself?
Well, again, with fatigue, it does go both ways. You know, I can say fatigue is something that I have no control over, but I also can't justify saying that every minute of fatigue I feel is due to whatever disorder it is I have. Mm-hmm. There is also an onus on me where it's... There are some times when I am not a perfect person and I postpone stuff when I really should have stuck to my very strict schedule kind of thing, and that made it build up, which meant that I had to stay awake for 10 hours instead of sleeping for 20 like I usually
do. But that's the reality of everybody's, like, it's not...
I think that's just part of being a student.
That's part of being human in a way. Like, I don't know if we can remain that level. It's an impossible task to be that self-regulated mm-hmm. all the time mm-hmm. because you're human mm-hmm. and human beings are open and dynamic mm-hmm. systems. Your variables are going to constantly shift. It's like an impossible thing to control all of your variables at all times. Mm-hmm. It's not a possibility. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me. You're saying, you know, how much of it is you and how much of it is the condition itself. Like, from the sounds of it, the condition is a very big part of it. Like,
yeah.
You're just like, you are fatigued, you have migraines, and that is impacting the other aspects of your life, especially if you are, you know, asleep now. Mm-hmm. If you are fatigued and you're asleep and you're gone for 2-3 days, mm-hmm. then there you have to catch up to those mm-hmm. things. And you have to be able to deal with what you've missed during those 2-3 days, mm-hmm. which is kind of adding more stuff within limited time frame window. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's also perpetuating further the fatigue in itself. Have you looked at that? Have you thought about that?
It's quite possible that that's true, and I can't deny that. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I'm a very determined person, and
there's
a lot of stuff that I want to do, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff that I want to get done. I want to go to med school. Mm-hmm. I want to get into a good master's program. I want to graduate with good grades and all of this kind of thing. So for me, it was more of a challenge to balance that, where I'm saying, okay, I have something that's going to make it harder, but at the same time, I still need to do it, and I mm-hmm. still want to do it. Mm-hmm. I could have just accepted it and said, okay, I'm got chronic fatigue. I don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to get fixed. I'm just going to take a break from school, which I did think about a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But then I decided that I would rather be in school and dealing with this on a day-to-day basis than I would be to drop out indefinitely. Because mm-hmm. I'm the only person on the medical side, I'm the only person advocating for myself.
Yeah.
On my lifestyle side, I've been extraordinarily lucky. Like I said, my friends are a huge, huge support system.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your support system and how they're helping you out and how you are managing, like, your day-to-day reality. How are you managing living with this and mm-hmm. having to advocate for yourself, knowing that this is a condition that is, like, you know, you're moving from specialist to specialist. Mm-hmm. It remains undiagnosed mm-hmm. and you're determined, which you are, and mm-hmm. And you're doing incredible things, and I think you're going to do incredible things. How is that helping you in terms of elevating? And if you didn't have that, what would it look like?
If I didn't have that, I can pretty much guarantee that what would be right now chronic fatigue or narcolepsy would transition into more of a mental health problem, mm-hmm. because I think those two go hand in hand a lot. Feeling exhaustion is very similar to feelings of depression and that kind of thing. And my friends are just there. I live with them, and they remind me that when I'm awake, that I'm awake for a reason, and it's a good thing. And even though I sleep a lot, every time I wake up, they're like, "Hey, it's 4 p.m. You finally made it." And I'm like, "Hey, hey." You know, I walk downstairs and everybody gives me like a round of applause. And
yeah.
My friends will come upstairs and they'll bring me coffee when I just wake up, or I'll, before I go to bed, they ask me, "Oh, what time did you want to get up tomorrow?" It's always a two-parter. What time are you hoping to get up tomorrow?
Yeah.
And what time do I need to wake you up if all else fails? And those are two very different times.
Have you tried to wake you up at times and they're just like not happening?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember having like, I think I got strep throat twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually as close as one can get to chronic fatigue,
mm-hmm.
because the body, it just the act of like going from bed to the bathroom
mm-hmm.
was exhausting.
Yeah. That would, exhausting. Or anybody who's have mono, it's a very similar.
Yeah. Similar experience of like that kind of exhaustion.
Yeah.
Because I remember just the idea of eating is exhausting.
Oh, that's a big thing. My housemates, mm-hmm. every time they see me, they go, "Have you eaten today?" And I go, "Yeah." And then if I take too long to answer, one of them just walks up to me and like hands me a sandwich. You. Yeah.
Which is like the most basic necessities, like, you know, in terms of survival is food.
Mm-hmm.
And do they do the food preparation? Like, are you collectively doing food preparation they've done the food preparation. They're like, "Here."
We're a bit of a 50-50 toss-up. Yeah. We all buy our own groceries, mm-hmm. and I always have snacks on hand for the most part, but mm-hmm. I either forget to eat large meals, or I'm tired so I'm not hungry, or along with headaches and migraines comes a lot of nausea, and when I'm nauseous I don't want to eat either. And everybody shares everything, though. Like, if one of us comes home with the bag of candies or a bag of chips, or, you mm-hmm. know, a rotisserie chicken from Loblaws when we're really splurging, you know, mm-hmm. we all sit and we share. So it's a bit of both, I'd say.
So going back to the waking you up, like, have you had where they are waking you up and you're just like, "No,
yep,
not happening."
They've also picked up on that a lot.
Okay.
When it first started, I had moved in with them with second year, which is when this all started.
Yeah.
So for them, this has been a consistent thing for the past. It's been a journey with me, and they've seen me go from sleeping for 4 or 5 days at a time to now sleeping for 13, 14 hours a night on average, but being able to have that second part of the day to myself. And as my friend's slogan for me is Robin's just not available during morning hours.
Yeah.
Which is true. It's after 1 p.m. kind of thing is my prime time.
What is your sleep schedule like?
If you let me sleep, mm-hmm. I will sleep indefinitely, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I have a cat who also enjoys that.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to be up for something, I can wake myself up. Mm-hmm. It's just the second I wake up, I know whether or not I can wake up and manage it, or mm-hmm. I physically can't, and that is usually the sign of a headache or a migraine or so I usually set my alarm for my ideal time to wake up, which is the morning at a reasonable hour like the rest of the world wakes up, mm-hmm. and then when my alarm goes off, one of three things happens: A, I hear it and I wake up and then I'm able to get up and mosey on; two, I don't even hear it, there's no conscious awareness whatsoever that my alarm's gone off, and I either turn it off in my sleep, which I think everybody's experienced, but mm-hmm. Or it just plays for 2-3 hours and I know my alarm was set for 8:30 a.m. and then I wake up at 1 p.m. and it's still playing in my bed.
Mm-hmm.
Or three is that I wake up, I hear it, but it's just too much to get up and I just have to turn it off and say, "Look, you got to sleep a few more hours at least." And then I either wake up again a few hours later and I reassess,
mm-hmm.
or I get up, and it kind of depends on the day.
And then are you hungry? Like, do you eat right when you wake up, or it takes you a little while to get going in terms of food intake?
It depends on the day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I wake up and I'm starving.
Yeah.
And so I just go down, but I eat just like a little bit, and usually that makes me not so starving.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It's not a desire to eat like a big meal. Yeah, afternoons I get pretty snacky. My friends always say that I'm not a daytime eater. I'm a nighttime snacker, which is extremely accurate.
So before you started feeling the symptoms of this level of fatigue, mm-hmm. prior to that, how was it for you? Like, how was your adolescence and early, like, in terms of, like, sleeping?
It was always pretty good. I mean,
activity level and all of that.
Realistically, I've never, ever in my life been a morning person.
Yeah.
My parents always said that as a baby, I was much better than my brother, who was older than me, who didn't sleep through the night until he was 2 or 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Me, they said, as soon as you were a baby, bam, you slept through the whole time, which mm-hmm. was good. I was pretty active in high school and in elementary school. I did competitive dance and it was in a lot of music stuff.
And where is your activity now, you find? Physical activity, are you able to keep up with that?
It really, really dropped off second, third year, mm-hmm. where it was dealing with trying to exercise on top of the onset of all of these very unfamiliar symptoms. Yeah. Just wasn't something that I felt I wanted to do or possible. Mm-hmm. Come fourth year now, I'm really, I'd say I've gotten a lot better at managing my schedule, and I really enjoy working out, so I try to do that 2 or 3 times a week.
Oh, that's fun. When do you, what time?
Always in the evenings.
In the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a friend who went to the gym with me during the summer, and she preferred morning workouts, mm-hmm. but I went to a few, and I was just like, never again.
What is the intensity of your workout? What do you do?
I'm actually going to Orange Theory.
Yeah.
Which is a gym in Kingston, where you pay for a certain number of classes, and then you go, and it's high intensity between floor, treadmill, rower.
Okay.
They've got a great community there, and I really enjoy the classes.
Yeah.
For me, it's a lot more motivation to go there because I know I have to go for an hour. I don't have to figure out what I'm doing.
Somebody has it full figured.
They put me on a treadmill, and they say run, and then if you stop, they go, why are you stopping?
Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah.
Do you find?
I find it just, because I feel like it's not a waste of my time. Sometimes you go to the gym, and, you know, I would spend 2-3 hours there by myself because you go on the treadmill and then you kind of take a break and mosey around for a bit and then you do something else and then an hour's passed and you're kind of like, have I really gotten a really good workout in right now? And mm-hmm. it's no.
It's somebody else like pushing you into it and stuff. You feel like, okay, they're really
I show up to a class, I have an hour, I'm going to work really, really hard and then I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, and you don't have to think about it. That that part of your physical, like physicality is done and it's taken care of and all of that.
A big part of that too has also been now that I'm doing my thesis, I'm in 2 or 3 courses a semester instead of 5.
Oh yes, and the load is down.
Yeah, I spend 15-ish hours a week at the hospital mm-hmm. Working on my thesis, but that time I get to choose when I'm there.
Yeah.
And I cannot stress enough how accommodating and amazing and helpful and supportive Nicole Dominic, my supervisor, has been.
Yes.
If I had anybody else as a supervisor, I think it could have been a problem.
She ought to be the gold standard.
She is beyond the gold standard.
Yeah. I don't think we have the medal that needs to be. Yeah,
she works so hard. Not met many people in my life who do as much and who are so happy about it at the same time.
And giving. Yeah. And such a, if anything, I think she's such a fantastic humanitarian.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad, actually, that you are with her because that is, you know, it's so important to mm-hmm. have that level of mentorship that mm-hmm. they are trying there to elevate you. They're mm-hmm. trying to help you. They're trying to motivate you. And they understand where you're at
mm-hmm.
and understanding that and still trying to actually having those conditions and say, going, no, we will do whatever we need to do to elevate you because, you know, you yourself are determined to be able to get somewhere where you want to go despite having this particular, in sometimes debilitating condition
mm-hmm.
and that's incredible. You are so inspiring to me, Robin. You really are, and I hope you're inspiring to everybody who listens to this, and I hope they figure out what is happening with you and mm-hmm. Help you.
That's the goal,
and move forward.
It's baby steps right now.
It is tiny triumphs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
It's just figuring out a work-life balance like everybody else does. It's just mine involves a lot more sleeping.
Yeah. Yours have variables that are not within your control.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate you coming and talking to us
about
this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. And hopefully we'll have more conversations on this as you progress through.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, please. Thank you. Come back.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.